with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everyone, or good afternoon, wherever you are in the world currently. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming that which has always been in you. Or we go a little bit deeper with that, reclaiming that which you have always been. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you would like to be part of the show this evening and, just invite you to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls in the second half of the evening tonight, second half of the hour. And just in case you cannot spend the whole hour with me tonight, these broadcasts are also podcasts. In case you want to go back and listen again, you can go back into the archives and just pull up the shows that you would like to listen to. And also, these shows are available for download on Audible and Amazon Music. Well, very excited to be with you here tonight. Here we are, almost out of the month of February, but I am here every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And for those of you who are tuning in for the first time, I just want to say welcome to the show. Glad to have you aboard. Because each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. Well, the month of February, as I said, is almost over, and it's been quite a month. Just many things packed in to the month of February, but I know the several people I've talked to, not just today, but at other times, they are ready for spring. So wherever you are in the world, maybe you're experiencing spring, maybe some of you are experiencing more, let's say, winter-like weather. But at any rate, it won't be long now. Friday, we will be in the month of March, so we will see what we get. So, let's see. Welcome to tonight's show. We're going to have some fun here tonight. It's entitled Smashing Coconuts, Breaking Through the Obstacles of the Mind. So, Smashing Coconuts. So, get that image, and, you know, keep that image with you. It's just interesting history that it has. Now we'll get into more about that, as well as why it's important for us to break through these obstacles or these limitations of our minds and how they really keep us victimized and not being able to see ourselves and understand ourselves as who we truly are as souls and to be able to live in higher spiritual dimensions. Now, I just want to begin, but give you a little bit of background about myself. I'm always asked, you know, just why do I do what I do? Or how did I come to my own beliefs or my own philosophy? And I often share, you know, this very topic with new clients, you know, about my personal philosophy of how and why I work with people the way that I do. And it actually comes from two deep-seated beliefs within me. And the first is that I believe that people have answers within themselves. In other words, you know the kind of life you want to live. You know what brings you happiness and joy and peace and contentment. And you know what doesn't. And the second deep-seated belief is that I truly believe that from the moment we are born into this world and then some, we have everything we need for in this life in terms of our talents, our skills, our gifts, our graces, our personalities, our strengths, the very best of who we are. And yet, you and I both know that there are times when people often go through some very horrific experiences, such as being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and people suffer some traumatic experience, or perhaps people struggle with making the same mistakes or bad habits, and so forth, that they have never properly dealt with and healed from. Or say we often struggle to make sense out of our issues that have been handed down through our family line. And nevertheless, these issues and the pain that they entail often keep us from living the life that we want to live, as well as, keeping the very best of ourselves from coming out and living according to those strengths, living according to those gifts and skills and so forth. And as a result, we often live our lives from a place of woundedness and pain, instead of from a place of healing or wholeness and love. Because it is quite ironic that we often receive our deepest emotional, psychological, physical, even spiritual wounds as a result of being in relationships with one another. And whether that wounding was intentional or accidental, it is what we do afterwards, once we have been wounded, or that, let's say, perhaps we have wounded another person, that will either reinforce those wounds or find a way to be healed and to be free from those burdens, to be free from being a victim. Yet, in order to find our healing, we need to be in healthier relationships in order to heal from damaged emotions or wounded spirits and the lack of emotional and psychological support. But, when people's deep wounds are not healed, the wound itself can become a vortex of troubled waters, often intertwining with their own, let's say, instinct of survival and fear. And many people instinctively synchronize, let's say, their wavelengths with offenders, and that keeps them in this perpetual motion of being a victim. And let's say they take it one step further, and they may have even internalized their perpetrator's images and values and externalized them in treating their own victims. So, in short, people often end up seeing the world or seeing themselves through their oppressor's eyes. And seeing again through their own eyes begins the healing process. And this is a very important aspect when considering who we are. Because although we may have similar gifts and talents and skills and strengths and character traits, no two people express these identically. In other words, each of us have a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. People can try and imitate how we do things, but no one has the ability to be able to duplicate us. Because within us lies what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as a chaetas, a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will. Or, as I explain it to kids, it's a thumbprint. Everybody has a thumbprint. Everybody has a uniqueness, a thisness. But no two thumbprints, no two uniqueness is alike. And this is, I believe therein lies the importance of this realization of who we truly are. But unfortunately, millions of people have never had the chance to discover their uniqueness. Because we're often told to look in all the wrong places. We're told, let's say, for example, to look for that thisness in the externals of life, or the accumulation of things, or the accomplishments, or the accolades. But this is not where our thisness, our uniqueness, and our chaetas is really to be found. Instead, this full expression of who we are is to be found within the deep realization and full experiences with ourselves as a soul. And yet, what often presents, I consider, a very huge challenge to this realization comes whenever we experience these very deep physical, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual wounds in relationships. And moreover, we may get comfortable with those wounds, let's say. We often go through life, and due to some unpleasant experiences, we may feel like we need to hide our giftedness, such as, let's say, we are tempted to give up and give in to those labels and stereotypes that others want us to be for them, so that others feel good about themselves. Or we push our giftedness, our skills and our graces and so forth, way down so that other people just cannot see them. Or even perhaps, you know, we were told that we would never amount to anything, or whatever other voice we heard telling us that there's nothing special to us. And these are all lies. These are all based on other people's perceptions. And it is ironic that these relationships where we receive these deep wounds just might be within our own families, or they might be among our coworkers or other institutions. They might even be among friends. And we assume that the people who are supposed to love us the most just might have been the ones who hurt us because of their unhealed wounds and their underdeveloped selves. But still, you know, all's not lost, because there is a power in seeking healing and inner transformation and the direct realization of ourselves as soul. Because whenever we transform, we also transform others by our presence, our grace, and our understanding. But first, forgiveness, kindness, compassion begin with really how we treat ourselves. Because when we are compassionate with ourselves, we then can be compassionate with others. And when we are more forgiving, let's say, with ourselves, we then can be more forgiving of others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this really opens up our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. And when we are able to truly know ourselves at our core, that is, as a soul, and live from our soul, this awareness really opens us up to understand the potential in others to see themselves as soul. So, all in all, first and foremost, transformation begins with us. And this is really what reclaiming authenticity is all about. It can be summed up in one word, namaste, which roughly translated is, you know, because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if you don't see it in yourself. Well, one of the things I run into the most when counseling others is this need to let go of a former concept, or for a philosophy, or an expectation, or assumptions that no longer serve us. And you can call it stinking thinking. You can call it cognitive distortions. You know, a lot of times what we think is real, but is not always the case. And stinking thinking is a term that's often used in 12-step programs that refers to the negative patterns of thought that often, let's say, add fuel to the fire of addictions. Or even if a person is not using their substance, that they have abstained from alcohol, if they haven't worked through what is often referred to as stage two recovery issues, that is, who are you at your core? What is the quality of your relationships? And so on and so forth. Has a person really changed? And these thoughts sabotage your ability to see the world clearly, and to, first and foremost, take responsibility for your actions. And a lot of the times, this process of healing involves an awareness of these inaccurate but very personal beliefs that no longer serve us in healthy ways, such as Let's say we walk into a room, and we hear people, laughing and talking, but the minute they see us, everything is quiet, except for a few crickets in the corner. And we immediately assume that everybody was talking about us, or making fun of us, or we did something wrong, or they're gossiping in some way. Or another example could be that this thinking, perhaps you get a 6-month or yearly evaluation, and your supervisor slash boss says, "Well, George, you're a great employee. You're on time. You do quality work. In fact, I wish I had 10 more employees like you." However, there's one little area we would like to see you improve in. And let's say we come away from that glowing evaluation, except for one little area. We come away from that thinking that we're the worst employee there has ever been in the company, because all we can focus on is this one area that was criticized, and not all of the other outstanding areas of, let's say, our work. Well, have you ever had knots in your shoelaces, or knots in your stomach, or you ever have knots in power changing cords for your iPhone or iPad? Has those cords ever gotten knotted up and you have to detangle them? Well, these distortions, these cognitive distortions and just unrealistic expectations, and even just assumptions that are just wrong, these distortions are like knots in a cloth that need to be dissolved. They need to be removed. And why is that? Because they get in the way. They get in the way. They keep us from seeing ourselves for who we truly are, because we think we see something accurately when in reality, it's not. But our minds tell us, well, it has to be true, because if I'm thinking it, well, then it's true. If my mind's interpreting what I see and hear and feel and taste and touch, well, then it must be true. And we don't often realize that when it comes to dissolving these distortions, the knots in a cloth, or on tonight's subject of smashing coconuts, we have to break through the mind's barriers, our mind's distortions, let's say, and we have to see things for what they truly are, to see things clearly, to see things eternally, and so forth. Because in order for us to really see things as they truly are, we have to dissolve the delusions of the mind, or we have to smash through the distortions or the obstacles in the mind, especially when it comes to understanding and fully embracing ourselves and others as living souls. My teacher in India once shared with me a teaching involving the Vedanta concept of laya, L-A-Y-A, which means to dissolve, especially to dissolve the delusions of the mind and our perceptions of that experience. And he stated that the mind thinks that what it sees and hears and tastes and touches and smells is the truth. But these sense experiences can in no way reveal the full truth of our eternal existence. So think about it this way. Suppose we walk by a demolition site where workers are dismantling a house. Okay? We've all seen this happen. It's fascinating to watch. And once the house has been demolished, let's say, they will be left with bricks, okay? And even if the workers dismantled the bricks, now they're left with clay, or the original state of the house's existence. The house wasn't made out of bricks. The house was made out of clay, but it was shaped in the form of bricks, okay? Now, to the mind, the house and the bricks have been dismantled, but they're no longer objects to be seen or held or heard or whatever, because they have returned to their basic substance, that is, clay. And all things have this capability to be understood as once having existed in their original substance. However, the key in dissolving this delusion in our minds of what we can see, hear, feel, taste, and smell as real is to recognize an object's original state or a substance. Okay? So in other words, not all we see is everything we're going to get. Okay? Which then takes us to the Taoist principle of Pu, as understood in the book The Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, which is translated into the image of an uncarved block, meaning the things in their original state carry their own natural energy and power. Okay, so Winnie the Pooh is actually Puh, you know, like you're blowing, let's say, a feather that's come down. You just kind of Puh, you know, blowing it away from you. So in other words, when you manipulate that thing, or let's say we carve the block, you may tend to think that, well, it's now lost its power. And in the stories, Pooh Bear is the embodiment of the uncarved block because he's simple-minded. He doesn't think too much about what life means or how to change the world to suit his desires. He simply exists in the world and takes life for what it is. And yes, once we carve or cut the wood, we can make all kinds of beautiful items from it. Tables, bed frames, coffee tables, dressers, wardrobes, you name it. Desks. And for all the beauty and more, all of these items have one thing in common. They are all wood. Well, let's bring this idea of understanding or seeing things as their original substance into the world of our humanity. Okay? So we, at our base substance or existence, are souls. We're not the bodies that we see when we look into the mirror. You know, yes, we have form. Yes, we have a body. We're just not the end-all be-all, the physical body. And yes, we can see ourselves when we look into that mirror, but that's not really who we are. And we have a body that needs to be cared for and rested and fed and given medicine when it gets sick or diseased. But at the end of the day, we're truly souls. And I'm convinced that the majority, if not all, of humanity's problems come from not being able to see ourselves and others as souls. Instead, it's unfortunate, but we tend to see just the opposite. We tend to focus on the externals, a person's skin, their gender, their age, their height, their weight, hair color, whatever. And all these externals have created down through history these isms in our lives. Ageism, sexism, so on and so forth. But when we can dissolve this illusion of the mind, or when we can break through the obstacles of the mind, we begin to understand one another in a whole new way. Well, there's actually another way to understand how we can transform the distortions of the mind and find our way out from the illusions that block us from seeing and understanding and living as souls, as higher consciousness. Smashing coconuts. And recently, I learned of this spiritual practice observed in India when people want to break through the obstacles in their minds, you know, such as distorted thinking or unrealistic expectations and living in illusions from the mind's interpretation, so on and so forth. And they often smash coconuts to break through the limitations of their mind's egos. Okay, because breaking coconuts are often associated with breaking our hard exteriors from our egos and realize the higher dimensional energy within ourselves. So, for example, if you've ever broken open a coconut, you know that to achieve this, it takes a tremendous amount of force to get through to the inside. And maybe, perhaps then, this is a perfect metaphor as it represents breaking through our hard-headedness and allows the truth of the higher mind to sink in and transform. And this is actually a celebration, quite a festival. Yeah, I think it's, if I'm pronouncing this correctly, it's Adya Paruka. It's in Karoo from the Tamil people. And I think it's in mid-July or August, somewhere around there, where they have this celebration. And they take it to, just a little bit further, that out of all of the ritualistic practices that are going on in that observance, the practice of breaking coconuts on a devotee's head is quite unusual. But it's also a, very symbolic of breaking free from your past and surrendering yourself to God. And within Hindi mythology, breaking coconuts or smashing coconuts reminds people of how Ganesh, the elephant-headed deity, how Ganesh provides protection and is the remover of obstacles from one's spiritual path. And this smashing symbolizes how often it is, with our own thoughts, which sabotage us into believing that we cannot be something greater than what we have become so far. And yes, it takes hard work and awareness to unlearn the old negative patterns of distorted thinking in order to relearn healthier perspectives of who we are as souls. And even in, even the Apostle Paul in the book of Romans in the Bible, the 12th chapter, he states, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. So even the Apostle Paul, in the Christian scriptures and other religious scriptures, emphasize this importance of breaking through the mind, an unlearning, relearning, thinking along the lines or seeing things and ourselves as God sees us and so forth. And, after all, our physical nature, strongly contends for our attention all the time in terms of hunger, thirst, fatigue, pain, sickness, procreation, and so forth. And ironically, we may often misunderstand an all-important lesson as we try to drown out our soul's cry for that divine connection by focusing instead on what our egos are projecting in any given moment. Okay? But when we truly listen attentively to our soul's cry, we become aware that everything we truly desire can never be reached solely by the mind and the body, because these things are driven by the ego or selfishness or fear or pain or pleasure or whatever. And that's not to say that the mind and body are all evil and that the soul is all good. This kind of duality thinking was what drove people in medieval times to punish themselves with physical wounds, believing that they could suppress the ego and their physical desires to become more righteous and holy in the eyes of others and God. And again, I think this is to misunderstand who we are as a soul. We can never attain higher levels of God consciousness, let's say, through the mind and the body, because these forms are limited. And, the reason for this, especially if we want to bring in the subject of trauma, is because trauma places a distorted template over our perceptions. In other words, trauma says to us, well, this is all there is, or this is all there is to you, and this is as good as it gets. I mean, all lies, all distortions that come from other wounded people, let's say, who have yet to embrace themselves as soul. In fact, once we embrace ourselves as soul, we are going to be astonished to see the power of our soul to not only transcend trauma and transform our wounded energy, but we're going to empower others to do the same. But still, as history teaches us, many have feared the resiliency and the power of the soul, and therefore have tried to silence its cry. Well, I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject, about smashing coconuts. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-666-3625. 627-6008. That's 888-627-600. I'm sorry, 6008. There we go. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Hawk. We'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I am Dr. James Hauck. In the first half of the show tonight, I was talking about how I learned of a spiritual practice that's observed in India and probably other places throughout the world, that when people want to break through the obstacles in their mind, such as distorted thinking or unrealistic expectations or living in illusions from the mind's interpretation, so on and so forth, they often engage in smashing coconuts to break through the limitations of their mind's ego. And breaking coconuts are often associated with breaking our hard exteriors from our egos and realizing the higher dimensional energy within ourselves. And I had shared right before the break that within Hindi mythology, breaking coconut reminds people of how Ganesh, the elephant-headed deity, provides protection and is considered the remover of obstacles from one's spiritual path. And this smashing, let's say, of the coconuts symbolizes how often it's within our very own thoughts that sabotage us into believing that we cannot be something greater than what we have become so far. And very much so, it does take hard work, it takes discipline, it takes awareness to unlearn old negative patterns of distorted thinking, because we slide into these distorted, thoughts all the time. We're just so used to it. And it does take hard work then to relearn healthier perspectives of who we are as these eternal souls. And this need to break through the mind's obstacles, let's say, is extremely necessary, because where thoughts go, energy flows. Where thoughts go, energy flows. And quite often, our negative, victimized thoughts are where emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds tend to thrive. For example, let's say we think that if we say something harmful or do something harmful to another person, that it's never going to come back on us. But it does. Every negative thought, every negative thing we say, every negative thing we do comes back to us in one way or another, often reinforcing the wounded parts of ourselves, at which then keep us bound as victims. We never heal. And we have many ways to understand this concept. I've shared this on more than one occasions on this particular show, because we have sayings like, well, what goes around comes around, or what you sow, you're going to reap. And even karma is another way to understand that no matter how you say it, humanity lives in an echo, that what goes out from us, thoughts, actions, words will return to us just like we hear the sound of our own voice echoing back in our ears when we're in a tunnel or a cave. So everything we think, everything we say, everything we do is energy. And unless we transform the negative energy through healing our own wounds, it's going to come back to us exactly how it went out from us. So how do we transform negative energy? Well, it begins with healing ourselves. And to take this concept to the heart of the matter, so to speak, the way we can find healing is to begin asking ourselves, who am I, really? Beneath all the external facades, beneath all of the pretense and outward appearances, who are we at our core? And our thoughts are at the very focus of how we see and treat ourselves and others. My teacher is often fond of saying that most people think that any undesirable situation, let's say, is due to the behavior of others. So in other words, most people do not want to accept responsibility for their own thoughts or their words and or their actions. You know, there was a time when people blamed it on the devil. You know, the devil made me do it, or the devil made me say that, or something, I don't know what came over me, just something possessed me. Or here's a classic comment. You see what you make me do? I mean, how many times have you heard that one? Okay, but most people don't want to accept responsibility for their own thoughts and words or actions. And furthermore, our perspective is clearly the result of the mind's interpretation of experiences. And this is where the distortions come in. The mind, let's say, doesn't get it right. The mind interprets based on our past experiences, based on our expectations, based on our assumptions, and so on and so forth. And we, you know, often don't realize just how distorted our thinking and our interpretation can be, because we just assume that things are going to go on and on and on, like they always have been. Well, the cognitive distortions and the unrealistic expectations and the assumptions are often the result of absorbing negative thoughts in any given hour or day or month and year. You know, for example, if you think you are weak, if you perceive yourself as weak, you're going to be weak. And if you think you are a victim, then you're going to remain a victim. But if you think of yourself strong, then you are strong. Unfortunately, many people have accepted their inner weaknesses to the point that they're attached to them. So in other words, they don't want to come out of their self-created illusions. And all the more reason why we have to be careful with our thoughts. What do we take in? Our words and our deeds. And trust me, I struggle right along with you. We have to be very diligent and be careful with what comes our way in terms of thoughts, words, and deeds. In fact, still a fascinating study out there. If you know, or you aware that a single thought, let's say, can generate about 4 volts of energy. And this is a study that was done back in the 70s. You know, do our thoughts have energy? And they had found when they started to measure, you know, do our thoughts have energy, that they said a single thought can generate about 4 volts of energy. Not to mention everything else our brains, you know, send energy signals to. You know, 4 volts of energy per thought. Now, compare that to, let's say, a AAA battery or a AA battery, which is somewhere, just for the sake of argument, 1.5 volts. Okay. Now, what do we do with those thoughts? When we speak on our thoughts or whenever we share our thoughts verbally, that number of energy jumps from 4 volts of energy to about 40 volts, or 10 times the amount. Okay, and again, let's put this into perspective here. The amount of voltage required to start a car from its battery is somewhere around 12.6 volts. Okay, so when we have a single thought, that generates about 4 volts of energy. But whenever we speak on our thoughts, positive or negative here, folks, positive or negative, it jumps to about 40 volts or 10 times the amount. And, you know, basically our brains run on chemical energy from endonosilin. I think I said that wrong, but triphosphate or ATP. There we go. Just like other parts of the body. And we know many of the things it does in the brain. And apparently the biggest thing it does is it runs the molecular pumps that simultaneously pump sodium out of the neuron and potassium in, creating and maintaining this chemical gradient across the neuron cell membrane, and so forth. And this happens just, they just fire away all the time. You know, the brain waves, the neurons just fire. Okay. And I won't go into great detail, or we'll never wrap up tonight. So anyway, but staying with the notion that our thoughts are energy, that let's say that we have a single thought, okay, and we speak on that thought, and it jumps to now 40 volts of energy. If we take that single thought and we write it down on paper, the amount of energy jumps even higher to 50 times more. And the reason for this is because we have engaged the head, the heart, and the hand. In other words, thought, word, and deed. 50 times just on a single thought. What do we do with those thoughts? I mean, this is a significant amount of energy, which not only goes for negative thoughts, but also positive thoughts as well. And the more that we pay attention to our thoughts, the more we do this exercise of writing down our thoughts at any given time in the day, the more aware we are going to become of our, let's say, thought patterns and words and behaviors that are often communicated in our relationships. So maybe by looking at ourselves more closely and examining our motives and assumptions and limited perspectives, we just might realize the first steps towards lasting transformation is to first acknowledge the illusions of, let's say, oppression, and limited understanding is through our mind's interpretation. Because although we might be in a physical prison, you know, but if we find our true nature, that we are eternal souls and we live accordingly, then no amount of earthly limitation can convince us that we are limited, inadequate, or restricted. And this is especially true when it comes to transforming our thoughts from being a victim and staying in victimhood to being a person who has healed from their past and who now walks in wholeness. I want to share with you now just a pretty cool exercise that I had shared with several clients earlier this week and even last week, and just being aware of the mind's interpretation and how we often keep ourselves as being a victim, and the need to metaphorically mash coconuts to break through our mind's distortions. And the obstacles. I want to read to you now a quote from Nelson Mandela's inaugural speech. It was back, I think it was 1994. And as I read this, you might also recognize this poem from Marianne Williamson. And I believe she had used this poem in her own poem, Return to Love. And it goes like this. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. And we ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You're a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure and unsure around you. We were born to manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And so as we let our light shine, we consciously give other people permission to do the same. And as we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So in other words, you're not a victim. So do not allow your mind to convince you of something you're not. Let's go back through and just, you know, take a closer look, a closer, you know, reading of this poem. Because it's really powerful. And if you want a great exercise about transformation and just the power of our thoughts and so forth, read this poem for 21 days. In fact, read it out loud for 21 days. In fact, write it down for 21 days. And the reason why I keep saying 21 days is because it takes 21 days of our thoughts to, again, be taken over, let's say, by our subconscious, you know, and it just sinks in, so to speak. So this is another way of smashing coconuts and breaking the barriers of our minds, or dissolving the knots in the mind's perceptions. So let's take a look at this. You know, you're a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightening about shrinking so that other people won't feel unsure or insecure around you. I mean, let's just take those two sentences right there. How many of us are guilty of that? How many of you out there, you know, think, I have to dumb myself down when I'm around my friends, or I have to dumb myself down when I'm around my family? Or I have to shrink back into that teenager, because that's how my family sees me every time I go up to the house for, let's say, Sunday dinner, or every holiday that, you know, the family gets together. How do I see myself? How does my family see me? Just on that level. And, you know, maybe some of you out there I've heard this expression of, like, now don't go getting too big for your britches. And, like, where does that come from? Have you ever thought about that? Where does that saying of, now don't get ahead of yourself, don't get a big head? And, okay, granted, I get it, you know, walk in humility by all means. But again, what is the advantage of not realizing who we are and the fullness of who we are? Or according to the poem, actually, who are you not to be? You're a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightening about shrinking so that other people won't feel unsure around you. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. What's blocking that? Where do we have to smash through to let the glory of God be manifested in our lives, to fully embrace it and fully embrace ourselves as a soul and to walk in those higher dimensions? What's getting in the way of that? Distorted thinking? Our woundedness? Pain that we've never dealt with? Or have we never been given permission to break through those barriers and to begin to see ourselves for who we truly are? That's powerful. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. Again, just sit with that. Where is the fear coming from? What is it about our light and the fullness of being light that most frightens us? You're not a victim, so don't allow your mind to convince you you're something you're not. You know, I love my friends in India. We go back and forth, emails and everything else all the time. And my India friends understand that people are already in a relationship with all things and all people, including God, but they just don't know it yet. They say that that's, you know, part of the obstacles. And in the mind, you know, we just don't realize it yet. We don't have the fullness of understanding who we are and the relationship with all things and God. And so it is a matter of breaking through these barriers or obstacles of the mind and realizing that we are souls that are vast and formless. You know? And again, another teacher of mine, Joseph Rael, also echoes, I should say, this sentiment in a recently published work that's entitled Becoming Medicine, Pathways of Initiation into Living Spiritually. And in this book that he wrote, I think it was a few years back, he writes, the way you become a medicine person is you practice who you are because you are already medicine. No one gives it to you. You are already it. Okay? The way you become a medicine person is that you practice who you really are because you're already medicine. No one gives it to you. You're already it. That's a powerful realization. And what a gift to yourself and to your family and to the world when you realize you are already medicine for others. You have all that you need. We just have to work on clearing out everything that gets in the way of that medicine in terms of our unresolved emotional, psychological, physical, and even spiritual wounds. And we have to work on our relationships that have occurred in our past. We have to. We have to be able to forgive. We have to be able to release those wounds. And we have to resist going into victimhood language, to break through the distortions of the mind and to reframe it, that I am not a victim. Child of God, I have gifts and graces that I say perhaps I have yet to tap into, but they're there nonetheless. And we have to work on resolving our differences, our pain, our bitterness, our egos, and our forgiveness. And in order for us to fully embrace ourselves as medicine, let's say, for others, and for ourselves, that we also have to come to terms with everything that has brought us even to this very moment in our lives. Think about all the decisions that you made in your life that have led you to tonight, okay? You know, and people wrestle with, you know, well, I made a bad decision 25 years ago, or things didn't work out the way I wanted them to 10 years ago. And that just might be true. But are you a different person than what you were 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even from yesterday? We have to come to terms with everything that has brought us to even this very moment in our lives. In fact, there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And that, like I said at the beginning of the show, is what reclaiming authenticity is all about, having the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you and who you are. So how does your medicine come out from your thisness? Let's say you're a plumber, okay? So how do you demonstrate your medicine through your thisness? And let's say you work in IT. How do you demonstrate your medicine through your thisness? And let's say you love to sing. How do you demonstrate your medicine through your thisness, through song? Because I believe herein lies a great lesson to be learned regarding recognizing who we are as souls. We have a lot of breaking coconuts, don't we? But that's okay. The metaphor is very powerful. Smashing coconuts, breaking through the obstacles of the mind. Because when we do, we tap into higher dimensions of a realization of who we truly are. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you again for spending this hour with me. If you don't have a chance to call in, or you want to go back and listen again to this this night's broadcast, give it about a day or so before it's uploaded and into the archives, and then go on the website, www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, and just click on the archives, and then you can find the show or shows that you would like to listen to. So again, thank you for spending this time with me. And in 2 weeks, I look forward to us talking again and really coming to terms with who we are as souls and how do we live out in this world as souls. So in the meantime, everybody take care, be safe, and I'll talk to you then. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to reclaimingauthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific time on PBS Radio TV.